fans, welcome to the menu, Monocle's food and drink program. I am Markus Hippi. This week, Yasmin Khan on the power that food has in making people feel at home.
Through food and hospitality, you can really express your generosity and connection, but also, you know, help people find their dignity at a time when people had lost so much.
Then we get a preview of a new restaurant in London, headed by Israeli chef Elior Balbul.
I'm building dishes, something that's coming from inside of me, and I want on each one of them to have the two labels of memory and emotion.
We'll also hear a top dinner soundtrack recommendation and this week's food and drink headlines. That is all ahead on this edition of The Menu here on Monocle 24. British travel writer and cook Yasmin Khan is back with her new book and looks at the recipes that are shared by countries in the Eastern Mediterranean. Some of them are from the Ottoman era. Some of them have been brought over by refugees in recent years. Khan's new book is called Ripe Figs, Recipes and Stories from the Eastern Mediterranean. I spoke to her to discuss the changing culinary landscape in the region, the power food has to make people feel at home, and how recent events in the region are reflected in this new release.
Well, I think in the last few years, I've really noticed with politicians on both sides of the Atlantic an increasingly hostile rhetoric towards refugees and migrants. And at the same time, we kind of saw within Europe the kind of after effects of the Syrian civil war, with the largest movement of people into Europe since the Second World War, like 5 million people have moved through the Eastern Mediterranean. And so I thought it was an apt time, especially with a climate crisis looming that is going to lead to even more movement of people, to start exploring what borders, identity, and migration might look like in the 21st century.
And obviously you haven't been able to travel anywhere probably in the last 12 months, but what kind of research did you conduct for this book then? You traveled to Eastern Mediterranean.
I did. I travelled extensively through Greece, Turkey and Cyprus, sneaking those travels in before the pandemic hit, fortunately. And what I did when I was travelling is what I do in all of my books. I cook alongside people, I go into people's homes and learn about recipes. And at the dining table, which is where I think is the best place to have good conversations, I try and talk to people about the lives that they are leading. And in the book, try and reflect that back in the stories that I write about, whether it's, you know, cooking with a Iraqi refugee on the Greek island of Lesbos or a Kurdish Turkish publisher in Istanbul, trying to explore really what food can tell us about who we are and our history as a species.
Can you tell us something about those individuals you met?
One of my favorite stories from the book was when I was in Lesbos and I met this incredible Greek couple called Nikos and Katerina. Nikos was a fisherman. Katerina ran an accompanying fish restaurant. And one night, Nikos was out at shore and he suddenly saw a boat coming into the island. And he saw that the boat was full and he kind of asked people, you know, what are you doing? Where have you come from? And the people told him that they were from Syria and they were here fleeing from the war. And, you know, Nikos was quite shocked because this was the first time he'd heard this happen on this sleepy, quiet, touristic Greek island. And he was so moved by the experience of refugees coming to the island that him and his wife ended up converting their restaurant into an NGO that served food to the refugees who were living in the camps nearby. And every day, I was lucky to visit them when I was there, they would serve delicious meals on beautiful long tables with white linen tablecloths and proper cutlery and plates. And the whole premise behind what they were doing was to show that through food and hospitality, you can really express your generosity and connection, but also, you know, help people find their dignity at a time when people had lost so much.
And what happened after all those travels? You mention in this book that the recipes are inspired by the experiences you've had, but you have actually created the recipes yourself. So what happened when you went for those travels and then returned back home to London?
Well, I'm very lucky because I live in an area of London that is a real medley of Eastern Mediterranean flavors anyway. So I live just off Green Lanes, an area that historically has been home to the Greek Cypriot community, now much more home to the Turkish Kurdish community. And so what I tend to do with my books, my writing process, is that I gather all my interviews and the influences from my trips, and then I come back and I recipe test in my London home, kind of bringing the flavors of my local into the dishes, whether that's, you know, delicious kind of halloumi from my grocery store or, you know, fresh figs from the nearby Turkish shops.
What are some of your favourite recipes in the book?
Oh, so many. But I think that the top three are probably a delicious hot yogurt soup made with delicious creamy yogurt and topped with a lovely mint and chili butter. I also love the pomegranate and sumac chicken, which is juicy cuts of chicken that are marinated in Aleppo pepper, sumac, pomegranate molasses, and then barbecued. And I really love, this was my lockdown favorite last year, the date and chocolate brownies that are kind of chewy and sweet and gooey on the inside, but then crisp on the outside. Perfect with a cup of coffee.
That sounds so good. Looking at the region, Eastern Mediterranean, Turkey, Greece and Cyprus, obviously they share a lot, but how varied is the food culture over there then if you cross over from Greece to Turkey, for example?
Well, one of the things I was exploring in the book was the similarities where perhaps political leaders would like us to see divisions. And I mean, the borders of the Eastern Mediterranean have been as fluid as they've been contested over the last few thousand millennia. You know, so many empires have laid claim to that land. And as a result, you know, the food culture has many harmonious threads, you know, throughout it, whether it's copious amounts of olive oil, whether it's a love of barbecuing meat over hot coals, or like the abundance of incredible vegetables that are kind of sun-kissed from the glorious clay-red soil. So there's lots of kind of peppers and tomatoes and aubergines that are used to put vegetables center stage of many meals.
As you mentioned, you living in London as well, it's quite easy to get a hold of good food from this region. But how much is there, say in Greece, Cyprus or Turkey, that the world hasn't discovered yet when it comes to food?
Oh, I think there's just so much, you know. In the book, I've got so many of the classic dishes we might be aware of, you know, the tarama salatas, the moussaka. But what I wanted to really show was that just in the same way that migration influences so much of our society, it also influences our food. So I've included in the book recipes such as Afghan recipes, because Afghanis were the biggest refugee population when I was there on the Greek islands. So there's recipes for gorgeous, you know, roasted pumpkin stews with a lovely, again, yogurt and mint dressing. There's lots of kind of Iranian dishes in there because there are lots of Iranians moving through the region, as well as Syrians. You know, Turkey now is the biggest recipient of refugees in the world. You know, 3.6 million refugees are living in Turkey. So what I've tried to do is reflect the fact that migration has always been part of our species's track for survival. The movement of people is as intrinsic to being human as perhaps anything else. And food can tell that story because, of course, when we move, we tend to take our culinary influences with us.
It's so moving to hear the way you talk about the importance of food. Do you think there are more lessons the world could learn from this region now? After your travels, after you've been working in this book and you've been thinking about what you saw, is there something about food and migration and making people feel like at home, some lessons that could be used elsewhere as well?
Definitely. I think if you look at the political trajectory of most countries in the world, you know, we're seeing a rise in nationalism, a hunkering down of, you know, borders and national identities. And of course, you know, I'm of mixed heritage. I value all of the national identities that I carry with me, you know, Iranian, Pakistani, British. But I think that, you know, it's that cliche, isn't it, that if you look at the world from space, you don't see any borders. And I think food can show us that there is and especially the Eastern Mediterranean, that there is a fluidity through which we experience life and we experience food. And just in the same way that, you know, I've tried to thread through the similarities in the cuisine of the Eastern Mediterranean, well, I think what I'm actually getting at is the similarities between people, because I firmly believe, no matter what politicians might try and tell us, that humans, wherever we are in the world, have got more that unites us than divides us.
And just finally, Yasmin, obviously, during the pandemic, we have very much been feeling those borders you mentioned. At the moment when I'm doing this interview with you, there is a debate taking place in the UK about whether people should be allowed to travel abroad and when. What is going to be the first destination in the Eastern Mediterranean you'd like to return to when you finally can?
Gosh, that's such a difficult question. Well, it has been a difficult year. And I think probably what I'm missing the most is just the swimming in those beautiful turquoise waters. And for me, the area that I fell in love with the most was the north of Cyprus. And I can't wait to go back. And it's really my hope that this book, at a time when perhaps, you know, foreign holidays elude us, will help transport readers to these sunny shores of the Eastern Med with the glorious kind of sun-kissed islands and gorgeous views of olive groves and citrus trees. And hopefully people will be able to travel vicariously, at least through their kitchens, by doing these recipes.
Yasmin Khan there. The name of her new book is Ripe Figs, Recipes and Stories from the Eastern Mediterranean. You are listening to The Menu. Let's next continue with this week's food and drink headlines. Here is Monocle's Maile Evans.
Thanks, Marcus. First to Sierra Leone, where scientists have announced the rediscovery of a long-forgotten coffee species. The world generally relies on two varieties, Arabica and Robusta. However, the re-emergence of Coffea stenophylla, which can grow at higher temperatures than Arabica, may be vital in ensuring coffee production in a warming world. The variety was extremely popular in West Africa and France until the 1950s. However, the crop's resilience and taste could mean it makes a comeback in the near future. To Washington, D.C. now, where despite an extremely interrupted year for hospitality, the Michelin Guide has announced its new stars for the city in 2021. The guide revealed a new two-star restaurant with tasting counter-style restaurant Jaunt, joining Minibar and Pineapple and Pearls as the city's only two-star establishments. Four restaurants were also awarded one star for the first time, leaving the American capital with 23-starred restaurants to its name. Next to Hong Kong, where just 7 months after opening, Penicillin has been crowned Asia's most sustainable bar. The laboratory-style establishment advocates a closed-loop process, which means that traditional drinks waste is upcycled into garnishes or even bar food. And if that isn't enough, they also plant a tree in Borneo for every order of their signature penicillin cocktail. Finally, it's a short trip to Japan, where the country's leading lager brand Asahi has come up with an innovative way for customers to get their typical post-work draft beer, despite an 8 p.m. curfew on restaurants and bars being in place. That's because they've revealed a new can design that creates a foamed head in the same way that a draft beer from a tap would. If you want to get your hands on one, then you need to move quick, though, as they are proving so popular that production is struggling to keep up with demand. That's all for this week. Back to you, Marcus.
Thanks, Maile. You are with The Menu on Monocle 24. Now, after such a long lockdown in Britain, it's great to see the hospitality industry gradually regain its momentum and new places opening up. One of the most interesting new launches has taken place in central London, not far away from Midori House. Placed in One Marylebone, a historic former church, Chameleon has just opened for alfresco dining, offering what is described as Tel Avivian sharing-style food. Israeli chef Elior Balbul is the executive chef, and before Chameleon, he was working in New York, where he launched his modern contemporary Israeli fine dining restaurant, Alenby. I visited Chameleon right before the opening to hear about the concept, the ambitious plans it has for the future, and of course, Elio's cooking.
One thing that I will say, I want them to expect to feel me in the end, to know me, to know who am I, what I'm doing, what I'm trying to deliver with my food. And there's like two main things that I'm trying to deliver. One of them is memory, and the other one is emotion. Because in the end, when you eat something that's gonna light your memory, or something that you grew up on it, it's gonna stay there. And this is how people gonna remember my food. And when I'm talking about emotion, the food that I'm making is full with emotion, full with flavor, full with colors. So those are two things that I want to people to be expect for my food.
So what is happening in the kitchen side then? How do you accomplish all that? What you are promising?
This is a hard one. How do I accomplish it? It's with a lot of hard work. You know, in the end, I think this COVID period gave me the opportunity to also define who am I, what I want to achieve, to take all those periods and bring it back to real life. It's hard work, but in the end, I think what we're going to deliver to people who's going to come and eat Chameleon is going to be something really different.
Tell us more about that. What kind of food can they expect? What is your style of cooking and philosophy?
So what I want to do in Chameleon, I want to redefine Israel food, Tel Avivian food. In the end, Tel Aviv is a city, a main city in Israel, that combine a lot of culture. They're like all over the world. So what I want to do in Chameleon is, beside highlight Israeli flavor and Israeli ingredients, I want to redefine it from scratch. It's mean, my food will be from all over the world. If it's going to be like Japan style cooking and flavors, or Europe or North Africa, but as a Israeli, as a Jew who grew up on a lot of influence cuisine, I want to try to squeeze everything to something that's going to feel complete.
Tell me more, what do you have on your menu?
So in the menu we have a dish that's going to based on tomatoes, like all textures, with a kingfish sashimi. We took this dish a bit to Japan area, that will be with yuzu koshu and some green tomato consomme that will be mixed with yuzu and green chilies. And we're doing a tomato twill from a red tomato that mixed with dashi. So we took like the main vegetable that's so familiar with the country that I came from, tomatoes, and we give it a little bit Japan twist. Also, we're going to have some shish barak dish that basically is Mediterranean dumpling, that we took this dish and mixed it with some Moroccan spice, and we took it a bit to a France area that we're doing like Moroccan bisque. You know, my style of food is that I'm really flexible. I'm trying not to be in one point. I'm trying to bring a lot of things and bring it to something really, really whole and complete.
So there you gave us a couple of examples of your dishes from the menu, but if you were to choose your ultimate favorite, what would that be?
You know, this particular question is something that I'd be asked every interview that I did for the past of my life. So I have the answer to something that this is like my believe way to say it, that for me, I can't choose what is a dish that I like. I like all is equal, because in the end, I want to have the option of the customers to choose why they like more. In the end, one person going to come for Chameleon because he ate the aubergine carpaccio and he liked it more than the shish barak dish. In the end, I'm looking about everything that I create as an equal. They're all my child. In the end, you know, if someone going to ask you, which kid you like more? It's something that you can answer. The way that I'm thinking about dishes and I'm building dishes is something that's coming from inside of me. And as I said, I want on each one of them to have the two labels of memory and emotion.
I would imagine that doing something like that takes a lot of confidence. What are your credentials? What do you think have been the most educating experiences for you? How did you get here?
Well, the school that I will learn is, I call it school of the life. Like, I never went to a culinary school. If I can speak about my career, my history, I think the place that I'm right now is because I started from the bottom of the bottom of the bottom, and then each place that I walked, I took myself again to the edge.
Like, what was the first place?
The first place was in Tel Aviv, called Frida Kahlo. This is like the first restaurant that I ever like took a knife and cut something or cooked or filled like a hot flame or grill. But from then to the places that I worked with Chef Meir Adoni, is like one of the most celebrity chef in Israel. He's have a restaurant in New York, in Berlin. I worked side by side with him for the past 7 years. I learned so much. Then I moved to New York to open my own restaurant in Brooklyn. This restaurant was kosher. This is, I can say, an experience that took me from a young chef to someone who is like confident, knows exactly what he want to do, and have a goal in the end.
You've been working around the world and you came to London from New York about 4 months ago. I'm wondering, you know, having worked in restaurants, say in Tel Aviv or New York, how different is London? Like, you know, when you think of all the stuff you've learned and the skills you have and, you know, the idea of the audience you have, is London different from those places?
So I think for this question, it's really hard for me to answer because, you know, in the end, I'm here for a month. And this is something that I will be getting the moment that I will start to feel a customer, feel people. But let's say for in a sense of something that I felt, people are really warm. This is what I get for those 4 months, a period that I'm living here in London. And I feel that something that I have the emotion connection with people here that is like feel for me something that I came from Israel.
I'm just doing my maths over here. I'm just thinking that, you know, you must have moved to London right when the lockdown began or right before it. So you haven't actually had a chance to actually visit that many restaurants or bars or clubs or anything.
Nothing. I came a week before the full lockdown was started. And we all, you know, my wife and my daughter, we're all getting like in a shock that what we're going to do now? Like, how are we going to experience everything? How will we 100% know that this is the place that we need to be? And then I always look on a challenges moment as something as a positive things. Instead of stand back and say, oh, what bad things happen, what we can do. So you need to find a solution. You need to adjust yourself and put yourself in a way that you know even if something bad happened, you know how to deal with it. You need to give it a solution. So we took this 4 months of lockdown to a bit research about a restaurant in London. I was like research always online to see what Israeli restaurant doing here, what other restaurant that in the area are doing here, that I can have a bit of sense of what to expect.
It's so nice to meet people face to face, not speaking to you on Skype or Zoom or whatever. What is your feeling? What do people want at the moment? I'm speaking to you right before you are launching your restaurant for public. I would imagine you're pretty fully booked already for quite some time, aren't you?
Yeah, we are almost fully booked. What is the feeling? You know, I was like 1 year of not meeting people, 1 year of not cooking in a restaurant, 1 year of not feeling this energy to come back after this full year that we all was not have the chance to meet people, to talk with people. It's like, it's crazy. I feel like I'm like in a out of space. Finally, I have the option to cook food for customers, to have the feeling back. I can't even describe, you know, my face. I'm always smiling. I wake up in the morning in such a happiness place. And I'm always, on the other hand, I always try to be positive and look on everything in a terms of we are almost in the end. Almost in the end to come back to reality and come back. But still, we are trying to keep as a COVID restriction also in the kitchen and in the restaurant as much as we need to keep everyone safe and, you know, in the end to have the option to come back to a normal life soon.
Absolutely. And just finally, and quite in brief, if you may, the opening of your restaurant is not the only thing that's happening over here. There are quite grand plans for Chameleon here at One Marylebone.
Yeah, One Marylebone is a venue that's going to be combined with one event company that will be in charge of big wedding events and bar mitzvah, and we're going to be a more hospitality company. But those two companies will be feeding each other and will be grow as a brand.
So there'll be much more in this location in the future?
In the future, yeah. There's going to be more to expect, really more to expect, with a Chameleon Club that will be open around October, November, I hope, and for more surprises.
Elior Balbul there, he is the executive chef of Chameleon Restaurant that has just opened in One Marylebone. And that's all for this edition of The Menu. For previous episodes of this program, go to Monocle's website, SoundCloud or Apple Podcasts. And remember to subscribe to the show so that it automatically arrives onto your device every week. Also, do check out our menu spin-off show, Food Neighborhoods, for great recipes. This show was edited and mixed by David Stevens, and I am Markus Hippi. Once again, we finish this program with a dinner soundtrack recommendation. Here is Heart by Pet Shop Boys. Thanks for listening.
Single beat.